is the Kevin Sheehan Show. Dende sitting in for Kevin on the Team 980. It did bring me so much joy, Max. Earlier this week, when after 2 years of playing this song, coming into Ben Standig,
he finally,
Kevin finally realized that we play the same song every time that Ben Standig comes in, because it's the only song that I could find that had Standing as a preliminary part of the song itself. So with that, we welcome on Ben Standig. And I ask you, Ben, had you realized that we had always played I'm Still Standing by Elton John for like 2 years when you were on the show?
Oh, yeah. You asked me once way back when, hey, is there an intro song you would want? And I think I said, hey, whatever you think. And then, I realized what you came up with. And, makes sense. I'm down with it.
And I'm sure that's exactly the first question you thought I was going to ask you when Micah Parsons got traded yesterday. I'll start, though, with that. Your general reaction to Parsons leaving the NFC East?
Yeah, look, I mean, obviously from a Washington Commanders perspective, this is good news. I mean, irony is that they have to play him in week two, but then that's it. That's only, one game a year at most, a regular season game at most, and it won't be every year. So that's a good deal. I was looking it up earlier, for his career, Micah Parsons has more sacks, tackles for losses, and QB hits against Washington than any team in the league. And obviously they play the most, play more games in the division, but that's, more than the Eagles, more than the Giants, and in some of the categories, significantly more. So, yeah, adios to Micah Parsons. One less thing to have to worry about on a consistent basis. And, in terms of the deal itself, look, obviously everybody's made a big discussion about Jerry Jones, possibly blowing this negotiation. I certainly agree that if you had any inkling you were going to do this, it would have been a lot better to do it back, before free agency or the draft to maximize the amount of teams that would be involved. I'm not as upset about the actual, moving him as other people are. I think that, we talk so much about culture here and all that stuff. I don't really know from what I've heard that, Micah Parsons is the most well-liked guy in that locker room. I think there was a lot more, love for Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, Zach Martin when they got their deals. And, I think with, we saw when DeMarcus Lawrence left to go to Seattle that he and Micah got into it on social media. And I get the sense that there's more of that vibe kind of going on. Very different, say, than with, Terry McLaurin, right? There was no sense of, everybody wanted him back, building, locker room, all that. This one, I don't know, but that doesn't change the fact that they probably could have gotten more if they had done this deal, a month ago.
Was there ever a chance that Adam Peters could have put together a deal that would have landed him here?
No.
What if they tried to convince senile Jerry Jones that they were actually the Washington State Commanders, not his rival? Do you think that would have worked? Send him the mug.
Probably the mug, yeah. probably not. It's one thing, Peters and the Eagles made, a couple of trades already, right? Jahan Dotson and then the one involving the draft picks a few years ago. That's one thing to trade away, essentially the best player on your team. That's just not going to happen in the division. So, at least certainly that's how Jerry was looking at it. So, yeah, I don't think it was any prayer. The fact that Micah had clearly had a affinity for Dan Quinn was always the thought of, all right, well, if he says I only want to go to Washington, maybe you could see it get interesting, but obviously that didn't happen, and I don't think there was any real chance that it was going to.
What was your biggest takeaway this week from listening to Terry McLaurin and Adam Peters speak for the first time since signing that extension?
Well, I think, Terry said that he was happy with the deal, and ultimately that's all that matters from his perspective, no matter what any of us think or say about the situation. But I think Adam Peters, kind of laid it out. Look, we wanted to keep him, but he also had another year in his contract, and we didn't really have to do anything. And I know, I think that's something that Kevin has pointed out before. And, I wrote, try to look at the contract and, talk to people around the league about, what's really going on here with these numbers. And, one takeaway I had was, I had thought about this during the process. If Terry does nothing, he says, I'm just going to play out my contract, knowing that the franchise tag is possibly looming for next year. So he basically would have made $16 million or so this year. The projected franchise tag is $28 million. Now, obviously, it's a risk that they don't use it or that you get hurt or whatever, but let's just, for argument's sake, say they would. Well, that essentially his floor, therefore, was $44 million guaranteed, which is what he ended up getting. So yeah, he locks it in as opposed to waiting. But you know, he basically got what was sitting there if he had done nothing. Again, taking on some risk, and now to give up that risk, he has Washington has his rights for the next through 2028. So you however you want to look at that, security versus freedom, I guess. They ultimately chose the security, which totally makes sense. But it was not a huge number. Again, $44 million is amazing. But in terms of the other people at his position, or what we've all been discussing for the last umpteen months, that it's less than. And I think I think they just held firm, and we're kind of like, look, here's where we're at. We're really not going to move. Anybody who says that McLaurin had the leverage has no idea what they're talking about. the team had the leverage between the fact he was under contract and the tag. And, ultimately I think they did use it. But, again, clearly the player seems to be fine with where it landed. And, that's all that really matters.
Are you expecting him to get a majority, if not just a regular slate of snaps come week one?
Yeah, I would say majority. Whether he gets, he's often in like the 80-90% range, depending. Well, maybe not 90%, just depends on the game flow. But yeah, I would imagine he's probably a little bit less than normal, because they have to look at this as a marathon, not a sprint. Week one's important. Every game's important. Week one, so is having Terry around for the long haul. And the big risk here that I think everybody took is, that he has not been practicing football. Yes, I'm sure he's in tremendous cardio shape, but that's different than being in football shape. That's different than just, being, completely in sync with Jaden Daniels and all that stuff. So, I think the first week or so, it wouldn't surprise me if you played a little bit less, because, they cannot afford to have him pull a hamstring or something along those lines, and now all of a sudden it's a multi-week problem or something that lingers throughout the year.
Ben Standing, our guest here on the Kevin Sheehan Show with Denton Day sitting in for Kevin here on the Team 980. So how are you envisioning Deebo Samuel is going to get used? Gone are the questions of where Terry is going to be. Is he going to be there? Is he not going to be there? We know he is. How are they going to utilize Deebo Samuel?
Yeah, I think this is what, the way we all imagined it when they made the trade, and I think we saw a little bit here. He'll typically be the slot guy in three receiver sets. I imagine if they go two receivers, he could be, the other guy, more so than Noah Brown on the field with Terry. But they're going to give him touches out of the backfield. I think this is another part of the Brian Robinson trade, is that when you start looking at who divvying up the pie of touches, I think Deebo's going to get some. Because otherwise, there's no reason to have traded for him if he wasn't going to get some. We saw the end around in that Bengals game. So, yeah, I think he's going to be moved around the rotation. He'll be the chess piece. And, look, I think I on my podcast, the latest episode, I did sort of a superlatives bit, including, who is the most outstanding player of training camp. And I went with Deebo, because he was the one guy who play in and play out. Well, he was just making big plays pretty frequently. When Jaden was throwing him the ball, it seemed like it was always caught, whether it was, a high cross or a deep shot down the field. It's hilarious that there was that talk about he looked out of shape or whatever back in minicamp, which was another insane thing that was what people were saying. But I thought he had a great summer, and I think he is the exciting piece to see how Cliff is ultimately going to, how often he's going to use him in certain situations. And, look, again, we haven't seen him with Terry really even in practice. We're not going to see it now, because we don't get to see practice anymore other than the first couple minutes. So I think it's really intriguing to see how they will deploy him, and he looks like he's ready to take advantage of whatever they do.
So I was always under the impression that if Jalen Lane got snaps, he would be a slot guy. But based on some things that a bunch of different guys have said, is there a potential that he might play outside? Does he have that capability?
Yeah, I've been comparing this to the Mikey Sainristil deal. There's no way Sainristil at his size was going to play on the outside. But when they looked at what they had, and were like, oh boy, we desperately need some help, and this kid's pretty good, he's pretty tough. let's see what he can do. And then obviously he had a pretty good year, even though, you know, he's still not a long-term option there. I feel like Jalen Lane is the same deal. As we know, and we've talked about all summer, the receiver depth is pretty limited. I mean, they only have five now, and the fifth is Luke McCaffrey, who, you know, whatever his future will be, the present does not suggest a guy who's ready to contribute. So based on that, Jalen Lane's had to practice more on the outside in case, you know, whether it was Noah Brown's injury prevent him from week one, or he gets hurt during the season, or the Terry thing blew up, whatever it may be. So, yeah, I think we're just testing Jalen Lane out there to see could he be the Mikey Sandersill version of this group. Now, because Deebo Samuel exists, I also think finding ways to get Lane on the field is important, and that could mean, you know, moving him outside. And Deebo would do some of that as well. But, you know, if they want to get him on the field between Terry and Deebo, as opposed to Noah Brown, you know, how do you do that? And I think testing him on the perimeter is certainly one way to go.
Ben Standing, our guest here on the Kevin Sheehan Show, with Dente sitting in for Kevin here on the Team 980. Was there any surprise cut for you this week when they trimmed the roster down?
If I say no, I don't want to act like I have all the answers, but no, because there just wasn't, like, I feel like I've been repeating myself now every time I go on a show, but when I did the 53 projection, I ended up getting 51 of 53. The two that I got wrong were on the defensive line at position that I said there's basically 14 guys for 10 spots. They only kept nine. You can kind of pick whoever you want, and it wouldn't, like, I don't think there was much difference between Eddie Goldman, Carl Davis, Sheldon Day, Jalen Holmes. You know, they ended up keeping two of those guys on the practice squad. The Josh Johnson one, like, again, I'm not going to say it was a surprise. To me, it came down to where are they at with Mariota. I think the mistake I probably made, I realize now, is they probably don't know exactly because he's only just coming back to practice. So if there was any doubt that he might not be ready for week one, you had to keep Johnson because, you know, you can't just bring the guy off the street who right. hasn't been in your system. And obviously Sam Hartman, you know, had not shown enough to think that he could be that guy. So, you know, from that perspective, yes, but I don't. So the answer is ultimately no. No surprises for me, really, in anything they did.
Were there any legs, you think, to the potential of them moving off of Noah I?
So I, you know, checked around with some other teams, and the best sense I got was that, like, he's available for the right price, but the right price isn't just giving him away, which is ultimately no different than you would view from a lot of players on any team at any given moment. But I think it suggests that, you know, they feel pretty good with Trey Amos right now. Marshawn Lattimore, the investment is what it is, and he's been healthy this summer, so hopefully that keeps going. You know, we talked about Sandersill, Jonathan Jones, who has been out the last, you know, week or so of practice. Hopefully we need to get an update from Quinn, and starting next week, he has to tell us things. The team has to tell us things, so that'll be good. But, you know, that's your four. And, you know, Igbinoghi, it's sort of like he showed enough last year that he having him as a fifth corner, while a luxury, maybe it's something you can afford to move on from if you can get the right price from other teams that might need something. Now, what would they do if they moved on from him? You know, it's hard to say. They like Dan Quinn seems to like Antonio Hamilton, who's a 32-year-old vet they brought in during camp. And, you know, they can have, you know, some other depth pieces. They signed another cornerback yesterday to the practice squad. They have Carlin Vigor. So, you know, it's always a risk. But I think that's how they're looking at it, and that's how I would look at it. We have a guy who's probably too good to be the quote-unquote fifth corner. So what could we get for him? And you'll probably not feel like we're losing too much if we moved him.
So with the team telling you guys things next week, they also give a depth chart next week, right? An official depth chart.
Yeah, that is a fair point. I think the only real question I have at this point is the offensive line. Unfortunately, my question yesterday for Dan Quinn was going to be about that. What's the projected look? Unfortunately, work things got in my way, and I had to deal with some other things while he was talking, so I wasn't physically there. But, yeah, I mean, the question is, what's the right side of the line look like? Is it going with the veteran look with Allegretti and Wiley? Is it thinking, hey, Josh Connerly has done enough and he's at right tackle? Is it thinking, hey, let's put Wiley at guard because he has experience there, but also this allows us to bring Allegretti off the bench should something happen to a Tyler Biadasz or a guard. We don't have to move two positions in case of an injury. Now we only have to move one. I think to me those are the main questions. So, you know, and of course, obviously, Connerly being the first-round pick, do they feel his development is enough? They could, of course, go with the rotation like they did last year with Cornelius Lucas and Brandon Coleman on the left side. It's a very unconventional approach. So I don't know if that's something that they would do consistently. I mean, I've asked about it, but, you know, they just kind of gave a, you know, we'll do whatever we have to do to have the best line. So I think that's the big question. Other than that, I don't know. I mean, I think things are going to have to play out. Like, is Jeremy Reeves or Percy Butler the technical third safety? Is Jordan McGee ready? You know, some of these things we're just not going to know until they play because that's more game plan-y stuff. But from a depth chart perspective, yeah, what's the offensive line look like?
Do you think the depth chart is going to have Mikey outside or in the slot?
I would say in the slot. I mean, Trey Amos, like I said, has looked good enough. I think if they go with a 4-3 look against a team that's showing, like, say, 2 and 3 tight ends, you know, a run package, you know, what cornerback goes off the field? I'm going to assume it'll be Sandersville because Trey Amos has done enough to show that, you know, he's worthy of starting, and obviously hasn't played a regular season game yet, but he's looked good all summer. So, yeah, I'm assuming Sandersville is a slot, and again, that leads into the Noah I, at least, conversation, because they do have somebody there, and Jones can play that as well. So, yeah, I think Sandersville at the starting slot would be – I'd be stunned if he wasn't.
What do we know of the schedule for the team the next couple of days? Off for Monday, off today and Monday, and then back Tuesday, hitting the ground running for New York?
Well, you know, the practice schedule just lines up the way it would in a regular week. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, they're all off, yeah, through the holiday. But, yes, I imagine they'll be back in the building Tuesday, start, you know, getting going, and then Wednesday hit the field per usual. So that will be the approach, and they, you know, start to get things normal. I'll be honest, I'm thrilled about this because – the schedule has moved around so much every practice that it's like, you know, it's messing with my personal life. Nobody cares. I get that. But, like, you know, it's hard to know when anything's happened. At least now during the regular season, it'll be more consistent, except for the fact that they have this wacky schedule with so many Sunday night, Monday night, you know, national TV games that there really won't ever be much of a normal schedule this year.
Yeah, the curse of being good. Speaking of Tuesday, Kendrick Bourne is going to be in town on Tuesday, right?
Yeah, he's expected to visit or meet with Washington and San Francisco. So I don't know exactly how that works with two teams on the opposite coast. Now, he entered the league as an undrafted free agent with San Francisco when Adam Peters, it was his first year with the 49ers, and he was with San Fran through 2020. Bourne, you know, he's a guy who's had some success in this league. Injuries, unfortunately, have kind of messed with him, but, you know, he's a guy that's been a contributor, and again, they have, you know, they don't have anybody right now who, you know, if Luke McCaffrey has to play, not saying it won't work, but there's nothing to suggest that we've seen this offseason that it would. So, you know, whether it's Bourne or somebody else, I do feel they need to add another piece. I asked Adam Peters this week, knowing everything that's going on with the receiver room, how confident are you with, you know, what you have? Of course, he said he was, and he highlighted also the three guys they added to the practice squad, including Chris Moore and Ja'Cory Brooks. But, you know, realistically, I watched them play this summer. You can't feel comfortable with them if they had to play either. So getting a guy in like Bourne, now, unfortunately, injuries, as I said, have hurt him, and he's been out several weeks now with the Patriots. But from what I was reading, it sounds like he was getting close to coming back anyway, so he would have to, similar to McLaurin and Noah Brown, potentially have to ramp up the football conditioning aspect. But, yeah, he could be a contributor. It would be, if they think he can help, I think that would be a potentially pretty good, decent move.
Ben, appreciate the time as always. Enjoy the extended weekend.
Always appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
That is Ben Standing. Coming up in about 15 minutes, Zach Wolchuk of Dallas 105.3, our sister station in Dallas, is going to jump on with us. I don't know. That might be therapeutic for him, Max, or we're going to laugh at him a lot. It's going to be one of the two.
I mean, it's probably going to be a little bit of both, but there will surely be some venting in there.
He's going to. I mean, I think we'll learn a lot more information about how the Cowboys got to a position to where trading Micah Parsons was not just a decision that was made, but how they got there to the point where they were okay with that decision. That in 15 minutes when we get back. How about a little bit of Denton's Daily News? It is the Kevin Sheehan Show, and Denton A. sitting in for Kevin on the Team 980.